Welcome to Come Inside.
Today's guest is Bert Colucci. I guarantee you probably have never heard that name before, but after today's episode, you will never forget it. He is the current commander of the largest white supremacist group in the United States, and they're called the National Socialist Movement. This was a really hard interview. Talking to someone who idolizes Hitler and runs a group who based their ideology off everything that Hitler did, really, was so hard. I don't want to say too much. Instead, I want to just ask that you listen to this with an open mind and an open heart, and you can make up your own mind. All I will say is this. There are some censor beeps later on in the episode. I went back and forth about whether or not to put these beeps in, but the simple fact is that I don't think anyone who is white has the right to use the N-word. I find it offensive when people use the N-word because I know how hurtful it is to so many people. And so it's really out of respect. So those beeps are in there because he uses the N-word, and he uses it very openly and freely. And I question him on that. I want to make it really clear to everyone listening to this that I am a huge supporter of the Black Lives Matter movement. I'm a huge supporter of the LGBT community. And although this might sound somewhat strange, it will make sense once you start to listen to the episode. But I also want to make it very clear that I have friends that are Jewish, and I'm a huge supporter of the Jewish community. I don't look at them and think you are a Jewish community. I just look at them as people. I don't judge people on the color of their skin or their religion or who they share their bed with. Personally, I judge people on what's in their heart and the type of person that they are, the type of character that they have. Usually I would say enjoy the episode. I'm not sure that you will enjoy the episode. I also am going to make it very clear here that I am not putting any links to this group in the description of the podcast because I refuse to use this platform as a promotional tool for them because they stand for everything that I'm against. So here's the episode with Bert Colucci. Feel free to let me know how you feel about it. And yeah, here it is. I don't really know anything about the National Socialist Movement. So I wanted to first kind of understand, how did you get involved with the party or organization, and what does it mean to you personally?
Jeez. I got involved with the NSM. I was originally involved with the KKK.
Yep.
Way back. Gosh, you know, this happened back around, I want to say 2000, 2001. Okay. And this was back before there was really, the internet was around, but it wasn't like it is now.
Yeah.
And so if you wanted to connect with these kind of groups, you really couldn't. They might have had websites at the time, but they were for reference only, to give you information. And it was pretty meager at that, I guess you might say. Yeah. So you had to know somebody in order to make that type of a connection and get involved with these type of people. Like I said, originally it was with the Klan, but even with those guys, I would have been the National Knights of the Ku Klux Klan. They were based out of Indiana here in the U.S. And it was just by dumb luck, I happened to catch one of them, and I was able to join the organization. And we did a couple of events, and I started hanging out with the NSM. And the more I hung out with the NSM, I started to like them a little bit better.
Okay.
than I liked the Klan. The Klan was... how do I put it? They're a very splintered organization. I don't have anything against them personally, but it just seemed like the NSM was more organized and it was a better fit for me at the time. So
yeah.
I started attending the events, and my attendance was kind of off and on. I wasn't always active up until it would have been the first event after Charlottesville happened.
Okay.
That made world news and everything happened. And when that hit, that's when I had been relatively inactive up until that point.
Okay.
And when Charlottesville hit, then I definitely became active again.
Okay. And what was it about that event that made you become active again?
Well, it got world news, made the media. That was a big thing. I saw what happened. I didn't really care for what happened, and I didn't care for the aftermath. I still don't care for it even now. I'm still dealing with it in the U.S. courts, in the federal courts. They've been harassing me for about a year, 2 years now over that, and I've never even been to Charlottesville in my life, and they're making... The federal courts are making threats towards me and everything else, and I don't like it.
Yes, so, that's interesting. Why are they threatening you if you weren't even there?
Well, that's a great question. If you figure out the answer to it, you let me know. they're basically saying because I run the NSM, which is based out of Florida now, and we have the old website, the NSM website, and they're saying that the whole thing, I don't know if you're familiar with the Stern and the Jeff Scoop story, about how, you know, they reference the Black Klansmen and everything else.
Yeah.
And they're basically saying that they're admitting that I outsmarted both of them and started up my own NSM in a different part of the United States.
Okay.
And now they're, I think they're kind of, for lack of a better word, I'll say butthurt that I outsmarted them. And now they're, you know, they're basically trying to say that I have information that is sensitive to Charlottesville, because the whole premise of the Charlottesville lawsuit is they're claiming, even though it's civil, it's not criminal.
Okay.
They're saying that the whole premise is that there was conspiracy to commit violence in Charlottesville. And they're making me answer for the old NSM, which I wasn't even active in at the time. But they're making me answer as if I was. And so whenever they depose me or ask me questions, I'm like, I don't know. I wasn't there.
Yeah.
And it's like every question they said, well, did you make motel arrangements for the NSM members? Again, I wasn't there. I don't know. I don't know who made these, you know, and they're asking me all these questions. Okay. And I'm like, I don't know the answers, you know.
Yeah.
And it's frustrating them.
Yeah, of course. I could say that. What's the biggest difference between the beliefs of the KKK and the NSM? Are there big differences there, or is it just that you're more organized at the NSM?
I think it's a combination of the two, I would say. The Klan is, depending on which organization you're talking about specifically, they're very Christian-based.
Yep.
The NSM is not, I mean, there are some groups like the IKA where they're not as Christian-based. They don't really care. They will embrace the swastika as well as, you know, the Christian cross. But most of them, your traditional Klans, are very Christian, and they won't hear of anything else other than what they call, term that they use? Christian identity is what they call it. So basically, that, you know, they believe Jesus was white, everybody was white. Basically a Christian, but everybody was white in the Bible level. That's basically where they're coming from. Whereas the NSM really doesn't care what religion you are. You can be a Christian, which I am, I still am. But I'm essentially a minority. In the NSM, we have people that are a lot of Odinists. We have a lot of, you know, the pagan type people. We have atheists. I hesitantly say we actually have some Satanists, surprisingly. Okay. So, yeah. I mean, it's a very, I hate to use the word, it's a terrible word, but it's a very diverse religious community.
So you're the commander of the NSM. I want to kind of know how that happens. Do you get voted into that? Yeah, how do you end up to be at the top of the chain?
You know, that's a good question. I'm actually, I don't think there is a protocol or a procedure to it. I think it just happened the way it did, because I came out after Charlottesville, and I came out in such force that the former commander of the old NSM that was based out of Michigan saw how much effort, how much time I was putting into doing everything. And I think he just kind of felt that I was the best person for the job. In the end, he was trying the whole time to get me to be in charge of the NSM Michigan, but in the end, the NSM Michigan essentially died, and I wound up, like I said earlier, reincorporating in Florida. As far as the procedure goes, it's basic, you know, I hate to say it, but I find it very disturbing. I guess as sad as it is, I'm the most qualified person. Yeah. You know, for the job. And I'm no Adolf Hitler, you know, and it's kind of it's an unusual position to be in, but I try to make people understand, you know, you're not the first person to ask me that question. Yeah. But I'm just like, hey, I guess, you know, I suck and everybody else sucks. I just don't suck as bad as the other choices would be my answer, I guess.
What does that position hold? What do you do?
I basically oversee the day-to-day operations of the NSM. Okay. Make sure everything goes as it should, I guess, in terms of the media department, the rank and file members. In the past, we've had lots of problems with drama in the organization, a lot of fighting because of religion. It's my job to make sure that I cut all that stuff off, and I have. There hasn't been any problems with it to date. Religion really wasn't a big problem, even in the old NSM, but there have been some issues there. But a lot of the issues that were a problem before have essentially stopped.
Okay.
Because I've changed some of the procedures.
Can I ask, is that your job? Like, is that your full-time job? Do you get paid for that, or is this...
Oh, no.
You've got like a job outside.
I'd be a lot skinnier if I had to live on NSM salary. No, it's that's definitely not the case. I work regular jobs as well.
Okay, and you're really open about the fact that you are the commander of the NSM at these other jobs, or is that something you keep a little bit more quiet because you're not sure how people will react or understand it?
I think some people know. I think as far as me being open about it, that's not something I discuss when I go on my jobs, because I'm not being paid to be a politician. I'm being paid to do a job.
Yeah.
So it generally raises controversy, and that's the last place I want to see it. So obviously in my job, I mean, if it were to happen, if, you know, it's like, hey, you know, aren't you the Nazi guy we saw on TV? And, you know, they happen to pick me out or something like that. I mean, it's really neither here nor there to me. If it causes a problem and the job throws their hands up in the air and says, you know, you're a great worker, but we can't use you. And that's happened to me, you know, in many years past.
Yeah.
Then I'll just go get another job. I mean, it's not that hard to do. There's plenty of them.
Okay, I see. So how does someone become a member of the NSM?
Well, here in the U.S., you just basically, there's no application process. I've eliminated that. We don't collect people's personal information. There's been too much doxing going on. So we neither collect that information nor want the responsibility for it. And that's something that the old NSM did that I changed. And I'm pretty adamant about that. So basically you would just get $100, U.S. dollars together, by Bitcoin, by check, money order, whatever you got, cash. And you mail it into the Florida address, and in turn, we'll turn around and send you a black uniform shirt. We'll send you a swastika armband, and after 6 months, if you've been good, we haven't had any problems out of you, we'll send you your patch at that point.
Okay, so it's a six-month kind of almost trial period.
Yeah, that gives us some time to figure out the people, because we are kind of taking people in, you know, kind of at face value. We're not collecting their information, so we don't really have any way, you know, to run background checks on anybody and, you know, find out if they've got anything that contradicts with the movement. We have had some issues with that, but I wouldn't say extensive problems. We've had a couple of child molesters try to get in, things of that nature. And we you know, are vehemently against that. You know, no child molesters, no rapists, anything of that nature. It's strictly not allowed.
So are only white, straight people allowed to join, or how would you feel if,
pretty much.
Someone who was, okay, so if an African American, homosexual, Jewish person, transgender, any of them had the exact same views and morals as you do, and the party does, that no, you wouldn't let them in?
We have people like that support us, or at least they say they do anyway.
Yep.
I can't honestly say in my venture as commander or even a lesser rank in the organization in the past that what people say and what people do are generally two different things. We get people, you know, black people in particular and a handful of homosexuals. I'd say not as many homosexuals, but they're like, you know, I'm homosexual or I'm black, and I think what's going on in the community is total nonsense, and I support you guys 100%. Whether or not those people have actually dropped any support, you know, financial support, I'd say probably not. I've never seen her, you know, they say one thing, you know, when it comes time to walk the walk, they don't actually do it though. So it's hard to tell, you know, they could just be Antifa imposters. Who knows?
Okay.
But, as far as them being open rank and file, absolutely not.
Okay. So what are your feelings, or what are the group's feelings even on homosexuality?
We don't allow homosexuals into the organization.
Yep.
I've got some pretty strong feelings on it.
Yeah. Well, Go for it. Well, that's what I'm here to hear, what the feelings are about it, and to just understand it. So
the thing with the homosexuals, blacks, and Jews, and every other, you know, group that you could think of out there, they're all basically the same. We have strong feelings against them, but a lot of people join these organizations for different reasons. Yep. Some people, you know, I can openly say they've probably been traumatized at some point in their life, and that's why they come here, because they're angry, and they really, maybe they don't know how to deal with that anger. They have hatred in their heart, whatever. It's a distinct possibility. I don't doubt it for a second. As a matter of fact, I'll double down. I'll say some people are in this organization just because they hate. I don't feel that way personally myself. I don't feel like I hate anybody. I get tired of their bullshit, I guess, is the proper way to put it. The hypocrisy that's involved in it.
Can we go into that a little bit more? What's the hypocrisy and like the bullshit that you're talking about that you're fed up with?
Well, like right now they're having riots here in the U.S. They just had the shooting of the black guy up in Kenosha, Wisconsin, and there's
Jacob Blake.
Riots breaking out up there. They're vandalizing the city. Yeah, I think that was his name.
Yeah.
And it seems like the problem is with the black people, the Black Lives Matter, the Antifa, and everybody else is they say they want equal justice, they want equal treatment, they want equal rights. But every time they don't get their way, they riot, they pillage, they beat people up. And this to me, they're not asking for equal rights. They're asking for special privilege. And when they don't get that, they have a little temper tantrum. And what frustrates us more than anything is that I could even possibly understand, like, let's say, this guy that got shot in Wisconsin is still alive. He's hurt really bad. He's got problems, but he is still alive. So if they had given the wheels of justice in the United States a chance to turn, possibly, something, there would have been some sort of repercussions for the police, assuming that they were, guilty and did something they shouldn't have. But because they go out there and they have these meltdowns and temper tantrums, the wheels of justice never even had a chance to turn. And now the whole case is going to be skewed because the judge is probably, the jury are probably going to be afraid that, well, if I don't give a ruling that Antifa or Black Lives Matter wants, they're going to destroy my town again. And there's nothing fair about that, whatever. It's just a bullying tactic. It's kind of what they did in Charlottesville, what they're continuing to do. So it's really a bullying tactic, and I have a problem with bullies. And I think that's where a lot of people are coming from on this, when they say they're tired of dealing with Black Lives Matter, especially Antifa. They're one of the worst. That's like our mortal enemy right there.
Is it? Okay, I don't actually know a lot about Antifa, to be honest.
Yeah, they're they're an interesting bunch. You guys don't have Antifa in Australia?
No, I don't think so. I've never really heard of them, to be honest.
Yeah, they're all over the news. Antifa's anti-fascist is what it's short for.
Okay.
They claim that they're anti-fascist, but they are actually the biggest fascist that I've ever seen or heard of.
Okay.
They use fascist tactics to go out there. They try to bully people, which is very much, fascism. Tried to manipulate people under threat, under duress.
Yep.
And they, if you notice a lot of the rioting that goes out there, particularly in Kenosha right now, most of the people that were rioting were white. They weren't people of color. If you look at some of the videos, and that's a pretty frequent story. And those are usually Antifa members. And Antifa in the U.S. it's predominantly a group of communists and anarchists that are mixed together. A lot of people don't understand the difference between a communism and an anarchist. Anarchist obviously is one who doesn't believe in any government at all. Communist does believe in government, but it's a different type of government.
Yeah, I get you. So if we talk about maybe some of the core beliefs of the party, one is that you believe in defending the rights of white people and the promotion of separation. What is it about those two things? Or like segregation? What is it about those two things?
I'm not a big proponent of what you're talking about. I think you're leaning towards an ethnostate.
These are just things that I've actually read in the it was like the core beliefs, like the 25 or whatever.
25 points, it's on our website.
Yeah, so I'm just kind of basing it off what I read on that. I don't know if you believe in that stuff or not, or who's written that.
I do. I mean, the 25 points, I've never been a huge fan of. Those points were, I mean, I they sound nice, but, you know, it's like another one of those things that, you know, they're on our website. I personally went through them. I edited them. They sound nice. I don't disavow them, but it's kind of like the difference between saying how something is going to happen and how it actually happens. Yeah. And they're generally, you know, they're two different things. So it sounds good in theory. But like I said, I'm not going to knock them down. Those points were originally written by a party member who was thrown out of the organization. I actually had to go through there with respect to the Second Amendment in the United States and make some changes.
Yep. Okay. So do you believe in defending the rights of white people? Is that correct?
Like, we do, but you know, that's definitely fair, but we believe in defending the rights of white people who choose to help themselves. In other words, I'm not going to go out there and stand up for a bunch of white people that, you know, are somebody who's been chanting Black Lives Matter and, you know, avowed communists and everything else. And, you know, it's now that they're an inch away from death that Antifa Black Lives Matter wants to basically kill them. They're at their doorstep and they come out crying and asking us for help because we're not going to help them. I don't really care.
Okay, I see. Yeah, so you're interested in defending the rights of more the members, the people who fully believe in what?
I won't say exclusively the members, but we help people who want to help themselves, I guess is the best way to put it.
Yes, yeah. All right, so what do you think about segregation, and do you think that that's what we should be doing? Do you believe in separating different races and...
I think they should definitely be separate. As far as how to go about that, my way is a lot more harsh than what most white nationalists in the United States would want to do. Like I mentioned earlier, the ethnostate. Just to give you an example, a lot of white nationalists out there, they would like to see the colored people have their section, the white people have their section. Yep. That's not my philosophy at all. Okay. This is my country. I want the whole thing.
Okay. So then, so do you just want it to be white?
I do.
Okay. So then what happens to the African-American people?
Well, we'll have to get to that point and see what happens, I guess. I can tell you right now with what everything that's going on, I mean, I don't want to say too much. You know, we can be really nasty when it's time to get nasty, especially when we're attacked for our core beliefs.
Yep.
I've said that openly and publicly. And if white people are going to be scared to so much as go to the grocery store, the convenience store, and fill up their car with gas or buy groceries because we've got a bunch of black people out there that think that they're entitled to everything because 5 or 10 generations back, their ancestors were slaves, that's a direct threat to white people. And people shouldn't have to live that way. This country, I mean, you know, 3, 4, 5 decades back or less, I mean, you used to be able to leave your house unlocked. You could leave your keys in your car. You didn't have to worry about anything because it was a predominantly white country. Was it perfect? No, it was not perfect. There were problems even back then, of course. But it was much better then than it is now, for sure. I don't think anybody will argue that point. And I'm not necessarily saying we need to go back to that, but I'm just, you know, giving a point of reference. Things are definitely going in the wrong direction. Now, whose fault that is? I would tend to say that's probably white people's fault for allowing this to happen. I would point the finger at more of us than I would the other races out there.
Okay. I guess I'm trying to figure out what the plan is though. Cause I'm asking you like, what do you do with the African American community? You've got American Indian community. You've got the Latino community. Like, what are you going to do with them? I'm trying to figure it out. Are we talking genocide? Are we talking like Hitler 2.0? What are we talking here?
Well, I guess we'll have to get to that point and see what happens. I mean, I can't go out there and openly advocate for violence, certainly not on here.
No, of course not. Because I can tell by looking at you right now, there is a plan, but you're just not willing to give it up. Is that what I'm hearing?
I mean, we are going to fight for our, you know, our preservation for the white race.
Okay.
I certainly didn't ask for this deal. This is kind of something that we just have. I mean, it seems like it's nature's rule that, you know, if we're attacked, we will destroy people who attack us. I honestly don't care what color they are. If they attack us, they can be white. You know, white people come up to us all the time. Most of our enemies out there are white. They're communists. They're Antifa. And these are the people that are out there screaming at us in the crowds, and they're all white. They're clearly white. Yeah. And these are our number one enemies out there. So for me to sit there and say that, you know, we're going to annihilate black people or whatever, or, you know, annihilate American Indians, it's kind of unrealistic, because we'd have to be put in that position and then see, you know, like, how is everything going? Is this working out? We have, you know, American Indians here. Are they okay on the reservations? We have black people here. Are they okay in their neighborhoods? And if there continues to be a direct threat, then that threat is going to have to be addressed.
Okay. Do you feel attacked?
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
Always?
I'm on alert constantly everywhere I go. I'll put it to you like this. I don't leave my house without a gun.
Okay.
Not ever. I don't care if I forget, you know, somebody's cigarettes or something out in my vehicle. My vehicle could be 10 feet away from the house. I don't walk outside my door without a gun. A lot of people would attribute that to being in the political organization that I'm in, but I don't think so. I think that that's something, just because of the danger level in America, I think that I would be doing that anyway.
Okay.
Maybe it would be a little over the top, but it would keep me safer that way.
Yeah, okay. So you are obviously, you agree with the right to bear arms, like to have guns.
Oh, strongly.
Strongly, yep. You don't agree with people that want to, like, stop that because of school shootings and all these massacres?
No.
You believe that
everyone should just...
No? No way. You're very strong on that.
No. I'm very, very strong. I'm very protective of the Second Amendment.
Okay. All right. Well, let's go into that then. What's the Second Amendment? What does that mean to you?
Well, the Second Amendment to me is protection against a tyrannical government. So, you know, I know you guys down in Australia, I'm familiar with that. You guys lost your gun rights a long time ago down there.
Yeah, and never in my lifetime, I don't think there's been guns allowed.
Yeah, I saw some excerpts of that where they were actually steamrolling the guns that they had collected out in the streets. And it seems like when they did that, it seems like the Australian people are never getting their guns back again. And that's very sad to see that happen. And I mean, realistically, you should be able to live in a country where you don't need those type of weapons. But unfortunately, just from what I've seen, it seems like Australia is still a country where you do need weapons, but now you don't have them. And the United States is no different.
What makes you think that we still need them here in Australia? What is it that you've seen that...
The crime levels. You guys have crime there. It's a little different than what we're dealing with here in the States, because I don't think... You think you guys are dealing more with Asian problems down there? That's what it looks like from our perspective anyway. Maybe not exclusively, but there are some problems down there with that we can see on our end. Whereas in the U.S. here, it's basically Antifa and Black Lives Matter and the groups here. So, I think I've watched Romper Stomper one too many times too. So
probably. Guess I'm trying to figure out, like, there's crime everywhere, right? There's crime everywhere. Whether you have guns or don't have guns, there's crime everywhere. So I understand to the extent of wanting to protect yourself and that. Do you ever think about the fact that you shouldn't have to have a gun on you to walk 10 feet to your car?
Yes, I do think that that should be that way. But I think in a perfect world, it should be that way.
Yeah.
We don't live in a perfect world, though.
No.
And it seems like everything that is wrong with governments right now is wrong with governments. And I guess I'm just thankful that we have this right and we're going to hang on to it for dear life, because it seems like everybody who's our enemy wants to see that right go away. They want to take away our guns. And I can't imagine. I mean, they're so aggressive right now, even here in the U.S. where we've got all these, you know, these gun rights, not to mention freedom of speech. Here in the U.S. and these people are aggressive, even knowing that we carry guns. I mean, we just did a rally just last month, about a month ago, up in Pennsylvania, and I mean, I was carrying around three guns with me. I had a 12-gauge shotgun, I had a 45 Beretta, I had a 9mm in my pocket, and I was one person. There was maybe 25 of us, and many of the other people were armed with AR-15s. And Antifa, four of them came up to us with a baseball bat. I mean, you know, this is how dangerous it is. I mean, we're carrying open carrying of these weapons. I mean, clearly, and it's like they're crazy or something. There's 25, 30 of us carrying all that iron, and you've got four idiots, one with a baseball bat, and they still are stupid enough to come up to us and attack us.
yep.
or tried to attack us. And I had to look over at the local police. There was about an equal amount, 25 or 30 of them. And I told them, I was like, if you don't go deal with those Antifa people, I said, we will. And they saw how many guns we had on us, and they put some strut in their step, and they went over there and cut them off.
Okay. Yeah.
Because I said, well, you know, they swing a baseball bat at us, we will shoot them.
Okay. Have you ever shot anyone?
No, never. Luckily, I haven't ever had to so far.
You've never had to? Okay. Have you been at rallies where someone has shot someone?
Or I've never seen any type of violence personally at the rally. It seems like I always miss that stuff. That happened up in Charlottesville. Yeah, there's been some violent ones. Back in 2005, the old NSM had it happen up in Toledo, Ohio. There were riots there. I don't think there was any gunshots then, but it was extremely violent. Yeah. And there was a lot of public destruction going on.
Okay.
But I just personally haven't seen it. I know some of the other guys probably have.
I want to understand, like, if we talk about the Black Lives Matter movement, and I know how you feel about mm-hmm. that, but when you see all these stories and videos and stuff coming out of police brutality and what is perceived as racism and white police officers shooting unarmed black civilians, how do you feel about that?
It's confusing because I've publicly, I don't like the whole George Floyd thing, for example, that happened up in Minnesota. That's a frustrating scenario. I mean, just shoving aside the fact that the guy was black, I don't like to hear about people. When law enforcement takes you into custody, you are essentially law enforcement's responsibility in this country.
Yep.
So if anything happens to you, that is their responsibility. Now, all I know about it is the guy was breathing before police took him into custody, and then he wasn't breathing when, you know, they were done with him. Why exactly that happened, again, it goes back to what I was saying earlier. It's frustrating because we don't know, and we may never know, because they started rioting before justice could even have a chance to get going on it. And now to us, it just looks like this black guy got what he deserved because he resisted arrest. And it's just very frustrating because I wouldn't want to see any of my members be taken into custody and then find out they're dead from asphyxiation. You know what I mean? So if there was something wrong done there, I would like to certainly know about it. And I think, you know, the whole country and probably the whole world would want to know. But again, they just keep on making a mess because they riot before things even get going in the courts.
Have you seen the video of him being arrested?
Yes, I've seen several different angles on that.
He didn't look like he was resisting arrest. Would you agree?
No, it didn't look that way at all.
No, and
not at that point though.
Okay, but do you think there's ever the right for a police or anyone to put their knee essentially on someone's neck?
I think some of those procedures, whether you agree with them or not, like Rodney King back in 1992, that's one of my sticky points. It was a long time ago, but I remember it well. And that was the reason why I got involved in this organization in the first place, because of the disgust I had because of that. What those cops were doing in the 1992 LA riots and what happened prior to the riots with Rodney King, that was actually textbook Los Angeles Police Department procedure. Whether or not those tactics are the right tactics, who knows? I'm not an expert, but we do know that they were definitely the tactics. You know, they were trying to subdue him, trying to get him to lay down, and they were using the clubs to try to get him to lay down. He was obviously chemically induced on something, and he would not lay down. But if you put a camera on it, it looks like they're taking, you know, billy clubs and just beating the crap out of this guy.
Yep.
And those actually were the tactics. Whether or not those tactics were proper or not, you know, that's for the bureaucrats and the lawmakers to decide. Okay. Apparently they did change them after the fact, but they basically hung the cops out to dry for doing, you know, perfectly legal textbook procedure. And so, they're just doing their jobs.
Yeah. So if we look at the George Floyd situation, for example, he's saying, I can't breathe.
Right.
So does that at all make you think maybe that cop should have loosened up and taken his knee off the guy's neck?
Probably so. The guy shouldn't be dead. I mean, unless lethal force was authorized. Generally, when that happens, that's by shooting. I'm in no way, shape, or form a legal expert when it comes to that sort of stuff. I do know that the police have their tactics. And I do know that black people in America can be extremely troublesome when it comes I've sat there and I've watched them deal with cops before. They're very belligerent. They're very aggressive. And, you know, they have so many problems, you know, between themselves and law enforcement that when it's with white people, generally, not always, but white people don't have the problems that they have, because most white people, not all, but most, have good intentions. And they want to do what's right. I mean, I know when I get pulled over by the police, if I'm driving 10 miles an hour over the speed limit, the first thing I do, because I carry firearms legally on me, I'm permitted to do all that stuff. I mean, if it's nighttime, I turn on all the lights on my car, every light I've got, so they can see. I try to put their mind at ease. I'll put my hands on the steering wheel so they know I'm not, you know, a lot of people are like prone to, you know, get your driver's license because that, no, don't grab your driver's license, because then they're going to think you're grabbing for a gun and you might get shot. You know, these are things that can happen to white people as well. The difference is that we're not belligerent about it. Like I said, that's not exclusively, you know, a race-related thing, but it seems like more often than others, that's the case. And these black people are just, they're angry because they're being pulled over in the first place. Whether they did something wrong or not is irrelevant. They're just angry because they're being pulled over or being questioned in the first place, and it usually escalates into an argument into an altercation, and so on, and it ends very badly.
Okay, so let's go into another belief of what I've read of the party, and that is the preservation of European culture and heritage. What does that mean to you, and also what is missing from today's culture that you want to bring back? Like, what is it about the European culture that's so good that you think?
Well, the European culture, it clearly, it predates the American culture. I mean, America's not a very old country. We go back maybe 200-300 years in this country. My ancestry, you know, I'm Italian, obviously, by my last name. It goes back, you know, thousands of years.
Yeah.
So it's much older. Most people in America are descendants of somebody from Europe. And they're essentially trying to wipe out that heritage. Pretend they're trying to change history. They did so by tearing down the statues that they've been doing all over the country. I could even kind of understand if they were trying to do so of statues of Nathan Bedford Forrest, who was obviously a Klansman. You know, I could understand that. I don't agree with, you know, nonetheless taking down that statue. But some of the other statues that they've ripped down, like Ulysses S. Grant, he was a Union, you know, he was a Union general. You know, he was against slavery in the United States, and they don't seem to care about what any of these white people were fighting for. They just know that they're white and they want the statues ripped down. Christopher Columbus, that would be, you know, that's an Italian, one that discovered America. You know, they're getting into my heritage at that point. They ripped it down, they destroyed it, they vandalized it, they set it on fire and threw it in a river, and there's been no repercussions for that. So it's like they have a problem with history, and that's kind of where I personally clash with them, because just for lack of a better terminology, I don't like bullshit. And when people try to rearrange history like that, it doesn't matter if it's pleasant or not. I just, give me the truth.
Yep.
And if that's the truth, that, you know, an Italian, whether you want to, some people think he was a tyrant that came in and, you know, terrorized the Indians. Other people look at him as one of the founding fathers of America. It doesn't matter which you believe, the guy essentially founded America and needs to be credited for that. And nothing is going to change that.
I've read that the mission of the group is to return men and women to their traditional roles. So when you're talking about traditional roles, does that mean women are in the home, cooking, cleaning, raising a family, men are the providers, hunter, gatherer? Is that the type of traditional roles you're talking about? Like, are women allowed to have jobs or no?
I don't like the chauvinist terminology.
Yep.
Of that. And if that I can see where that would come across that way.
I'm just very anti-chauvinist.
That's kind of a sore spot with me. I'm very anti-sexist. I'm very anti-chauvinist. Yep. I don't think that women should be in the kitchen barefoot and pregnant, and the men should be out there working. If they want to do that, I don't see any problem with that. Do I say that that's something that they must do? That's entirely up to them. I mean, they're free people, and if that's what makes them happy, then that's what they should do. I'm not going to sit there and tell a woman, though, that, hey, you can't have a job because you're a woman, because I think that's total nonsense.
Yeah.
What I do have a problem with, though, is when we put women in the military, and if they are unable to do what the men can do, that I don't think there should be any favoritism or any exceptions for that. I don't think women should be held back for any reason, but they should be able to do what the men can do. And yep. So long as they can do that, then I think personally that should be allowed if they choose.
Okay. But if they can't do what the men can do, they shouldn't be in the military?
I don't think they should be in that post, no.
Okay.
I mean, we've had problems. I used to be a defense contractor. I was in Iraq and Afghanistan and Kuwait for a time, working as a contractor for the U.S. Department of Defense. And we had women over there that were supposedly could do anything that the men can do. And some of these women couldn't even throw a hand grenade far enough to get away from the blast. That to me was extremely dangerous. And you know, it's not to say that there aren't plenty of women out there that could do it. I just didn't understand why were those particular women, and it would make no difference if it was a man or a woman. If I had a man there that couldn't throw, you know, the grenade far enough, why is he in that post? You see what I'm saying? It's just very frustrating. The people should be able to do their job.
I get what you're saying. So it's not necessarily about the gender. It's about the ability of the individual.
Correct.
Is that what you're saying?
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. So I want to ask you about how the party views the Jewish community and what the basis is for that judgment. Because I have read that, you know, I haven't read great things that you've had to say about the Jewish community. I guess I'm just trying to understand where that comes from.
Jews suck.
Why?
They are, I can't say it exclusively for all of them, but I can say it for most of them. They are the reason why everything bad is happening in the world today. I firmly believe that, at least from an American perspective, I can say that. What's interesting about this is, if you had asked me this question 15 years ago, and I had gone out there to Americans and been like, Jews suck, and I said exactly what I just said to you, people would look at me like I was the Antichrist. Like, why are you talking badly about Jews? They're just people like us, blah, blah, blah. And that has changed. That has changed phenomenally in the United States, because now when we go up to people and we tell them that Jews suck, I'm sorry, I'm just using that term. It's a bad way to put it, but it's just trying to put it in a perspective. I'm sure we would come about it a different way than that, but we'll just roll with that for now. If I was to go up to somebody and say Jews suck, then people more in America today, they're like, yeah, that kind of makes sense. Tell me more. Whereas 15 years ago, they wouldn't even hear about it. So, you know, you can see where it's changing, and they're starting to understand where we're coming from, and we're putting the proof out there for them that people like, you know, in the past, even during Hitler's reign, the Rothschilds, all these Jewish conglomerates out there, they can see that Black Lives Matter was started by a Jew. I mean, this is just the last few years. This didn't happen 50 or 100 years ago. I mean, Susan Rosenberg is the founder of Black Lives Matter, and she's a Jew.
Yeah.
She, you know, she's a Jewish terrorist, and she was pardoned by Bill Clinton when he was still president. And, you know, you just put these facts out there. NAACP, same thing in the United States, started, you know, nearly 100 years ago by a Jew. And it's frustrating for us because we've been saying this for 20, 30 years now. And we didn't just wake up one day and say, well, hey, you know, we're in the Ku Klux Klan and we got nothing else better to do but hate Jewish people because we're stupid. But I mean, the reality is the reality. And if we're going to address a problem, we need to go to the root of the problem. And just like the Charlottesville lawsuit right now, it's all Jews. Every one of these people that I can see on this docket for this Charlottesville, this federal lawsuit, they're Jews. And it's incredible. And it's kind of like they're doing themselves in now. They're getting greedy like they did during Hitler's reign. And you know, you saw what happened during World War II when people had enough. It got really bad for the Jews, and they're doing that again.
Yep.
Okay. So hopefully that shines a little light on that for you.
It does. I don't 100% get it still. I guess I'm trying to understand, why are they responsible for everything? Like, why do you think it's – do you think it's because they're Jewish, or is it just
– I think it's in their DNA. Why they have Jews are not stupid. They're not stupid by any means. They're highly intelligent. And when I say intelligent, I guess devious is the better word. They do what they do for profit. If there's not some sort of profit or some end game in it for them, they're not going to do it. Just like right now, you know, Sines versus Kessler lawsuit in Virginia, as the aforementioned Charlottesville lawsuit, it's all Jews. that are just basically going up to these people and said, here, sign on the dotted line and we'll help you crucify these evil Nazis. And this is the type of stuff that they do. So, and they've done this for 4,000 years. And for people to say that it's 2020 now, you know, going on 2021 and people don't do that anymore, that's ridiculous. Because a zebra doesn't change its stripes. And these Jews are not going to change theirs. And they are going to use white people. They've even, and they've done so successfully. We've waged wars against one another. You know, we've fought with the Germans. We fought with the Italians. We fought with people, hell, North versus South in the United States. I mean, millions and millions of white people have been killed. And in most cases, maybe not all exclusively, but in most cases, it was Jews acting like rats in the background saying, ha, ha, ha. You know, you've seen the Happy Merchant where he rubs his hands together and smiles and says, you know, we've got the Goyim now and the Goyim is going to, you know, kill each other for us, for the almighty Jew.
Okay. I'm assuming that you were in support of what Hitler did.
Well, to some extent, it's really hard for me to clarify what exactly Hitler did. That's where we're having such a problem because, I mean, your average normie here in the United States is being told that 6 million Jews were killed and, you know, homosexuals and everything else in the death camps. And we can't differentiate which it is because the Jews have clouded everything up with so many lies. So I'm kind of going at this from the perspective like, well, maybe 6 million Jews were killed. Maybe they weren't. I don't really know. You know, typically your white nationalists will go out there and say, well, absolutely not. You know, there was no 6 million Jews. They were all living in, you know, all these camps with swimming pools and everything else. And I don't know if I'm going to go that far with it personally, but they have skewed history. And we know for a fact that those who win history, who win the wars, are the ones who write the books. And we have picked that. I have personally picked apart that whole death camp conspiracy over and over again. It's ridiculous. And I could get into that we could talk about that for hours if you wanted, but essentially, if they hadn't lied about it and tried to make it seem so bad, it might be more believable, but I can pick it apart. I really can.
Can I ask, how can you pick it apart?
Well, I'll give you some examples, like white people in the United States right now. And I'm sorry, I don't have any other reference other than the United States.
No, that's fine.
I know you're in Australia.
Yeah.
You know, obviously a bit different. So I know that would be frustrating for me. So I apologize in advance.
No, go for it.
I don't want to misspeak because I don't pretend to know all of Australia's problems. So, you know, I would have to be there and witness it. And Australia is somewhere I've never been. We have a lot of people, you know, who support us in Australia and New Zealand. And I talk to them. So I get a you know, some ideas of what's going on. But,
yeah.
Well, one of the most common misconceptions, like with the death camps, is that that these people were killed, that they were burned, that they were stuck in ovens. And, you know, I look at that and it just, when we look at the camps, there's no chimneys that are attached to the building. So, I mean, that little tidbit of information, I'm like, well, you know, they said that these were death camps designed to kill as many Jews as possible, then the crematoriums just didn't make any sense. And then they would say, well, they were starved out. Well, of course they were starved out. I mean, I could even see that by their own footage. Everybody was starved out. It was a world war. The Allies had bombed all the food supply lines leading up to the camps. So that nobody had any food. And it was proven. You can see some of the footage in Berlin that was taken. I mean, you've got a German citizen out there. There's a horse laying dead in the street in very famous footage. And he goes up to the horse and cuts a hind quarter off of the horse. So they have meat to eat. They were all starving. So to sit there and say that they exclusively did it to the Jews and the homosexuals and the gypsies that were in the concentration camps, they were all starving. It wasn't just I'm sure the food, what little they had to be diverted to the front lines to for the soldiers would be my guess. Because those were the people that were fighting for the country. So obviously, even in, you know, English-speaking countries today, I mean, it would common sense, the food goes to the front lines.
What would be the point of having these concentration camps?
Nobody wanted the Jews. Nobody wanted the people that was there. They were told to get out. Is everything that I like I said, this is, you know, this is
yeah.
Obviously coming from my perspective.
So Yeah.
Right. It was my understanding that these people were supposed to go to Madagascar. Nobody wanted them. Nobody wanted these Jews. Hitler wanted them out of the country, understandably so. He was frustrated with them. And the United States would not take them. Many countries would not take these Jews. They did not want them. I just had a Jewish reporter. He's been calling me for the last 3 days. It's kind of funny, actually. Whenever he would ask me these questions like you're asking me now, he didn't tell me he was Jewish at first, but it was kind of funny. Whenever I'd give him an answer like I'm giving you right now, he would always make this sound, go, oh, you know, and I'd ask him, I'd say, you know, after 3 days, I said, now let me ask you a question. Are you Jewish? He said, well, yes, I am. You know, I mean, stereotypical Jew, you know, and it's funny. And it's like you could tell he was getting very defensive by the stuff I was saying. And I said, well, I said, you know, you're asking me these questions. I'm trying to give you the answers, honestly. You know, I understand, you know, maybe some of the stuff is frustrating to you, but it's also frustrating to us too. So you need to understand that. So, but yeah, as far as the camps go, getting back to that, they had to do something with them and they couldn't leave them in circulation. Possibly something like what you were hinting about earlier about what I might want to do here in the United States. What we want to do, like looking at it from possibly your perspective or my perspective right now, we all look as the government as these this mighty force that can just come in and wave a magic wand and Donald Trump's going to fix all our problems or the prime minister's going to fix your problems there. And it's not really that way because there's a bigger stage that they have to answer to. So yeah. If Donald Trump were to come in and, you know, deal with, you know, all the things that he doesn't like right now, and say, you know, all the illegal Mexicans that are in the United States, you're going to get out. And if you don't get out, we're going to kill you right now. He would have to answer, the United States would have to answer to the entire world and the United Nations for that. So a lot of people don't realize that, though. They don't even think about that.
It's estimated that Hitler was responsible for millions and millions of deaths, including what they think was like a third of the Jewish population in Europe. How do you justify that?
A third of the population. Well,
how do you justify again, all those deaths, like millions and millions, not just Jewish people, just all those deaths that were caused from World War II?
I think most of the people that were in Germany were fanatic Nazis. They believed in National Socialism. They were patriots. They wanted to see their country continue to go on, and most of them probably couldn't see a world without National Socialism, without Nazism, and wouldn't want to live in that type of world if they did have the option. And judging by the way society is today, I would have to I'd have to second that notion because it's not a fun world that we live in. It was much better back then. Again, probably not perfect. You were referencing the Jews when you asked that question.
Well, there were a lot of deaths that weren't just Jewish people.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to understand how. Well, okay, let me ask it this way then: Is Hitler a hero to you? Is he someone that you look up to? Someone you aspire to be?
I definitely do. He's a much better speaker than I was. I mean, I could listen to Hitler speak. You know, you listen to a YouTube video or whatever, and unless there's subtitles on the bottom, I don't know what he's saying, but
yeah.
I don't speak German, but I'm kind of like sitting on the edge of my chair saying, I don't know what you're saying, but I'm down. Let's go. Yeah. You know, it sounds okay. Good to me. And, you know, so
what is it about him though? What is it about you just being I'm there, I'm ready. Like
he's an incredible orator. When he speaks, he has fire in his voice. Very inspiring. And the stuff that he said, I don't know if it's choreographed. Maybe some of it was. It hits very close to the heart of people, particularly white people. I don't think it was originally designed for that reason.
Yep.
For white people, I think we kind of here in the US, we've taken it differently than it was originally intended. What Hitler did was for the German people. What we're doing is a little more, even though we have the swastika, we do all the things we do. It's a little more white nationalism, or one might even call it white supremacy now. So, but it did get very big here in the United States back in the day, even when Hitler was in power. It was definitely up and coming. So, does that answer your question?
Yeah. I'm understanding more of what you're saying. What does the swastika mean? to you? Like, what is the purpose of you having it on your uniform, carrying flags with it? What is it? What's that symbolism to you?
The swastika, to me, is power. It's an ancient symbol. It's much older than Hitler, but it's, to me, just with all of the history with the Nazis and what they have accomplished by using that symbol, it's power. It's absolute power. It keeps our enemies, just the symbolism alone here in the U.S., it keeps our enemies at bay. Just when they see it, they tend to flip out a little bit. I never really realized it before, but I see it more recently here. I really saw it when we were in Detroit. I saw people when we went out there. That was the first time I reintroduced a swastika. That was actually the first event that I had done as commander of the organization. Yep. And reincorporated out of the South like I am now. And I, when we went and saw the LGBTQ people there, we didn't say anything. We didn't really do anything. We were just walking. We had our flags out. We had our swastika armbands on. But these people, they were afraid. They were very afraid when they saw us. And that's not something, I don't know if I never had the occasion before, but it's just not something I had ever seen before. People crawling in the doorways to get away from us. And they didn't expect to see us there. Well, it's not the kind of power that I had intended, I guess. It's not our intention to make people afraid of us. We're not bullies. And that's something that, you know, I resent bullies, like I said earlier. But that's, to me, I would take that as a message. Like, if you think we're Trump supporters, we're not, you know, we're not going to come out here and be bullied around. And when they see that symbol, they basically know that this is the real McCoy and these people aren't messing around and we probably shouldn't mess with them.
Yeah. Okay.
So at least that's what our intention is.
Yeah. Okay. So let's go with what you just said then about, you know, Trump supporters necessarily. So you're just months away from another election. So it's either going to be Donald Trump or Joe Biden. Do either of them appeal to you? If so, why? And if not, why?
Well, Trump to me, you know, we've had this debate back and forth. I don't know that there's a definitive answer on it. We thought back in 2016 that Bernie Sanders was actually going to be because he was Jewish and he was a socialist, which is one step away from being a communist. He seemed to appeal to the party on the left. And we thought for sure that Hillary Clinton had stolen the election or cost him the election. I think that kind of echoes Trump's sentiment. I'd have to agree with that. He did have a strong following, very strong following. It seems like he's lost that now and Joe Biden's out front and everybody's supporting him. Trump to me, a lot of people, a lot of media, even U.S.-based media, they've asked me that question a lot, and they seem to be shocked when I say that we're not supporters of Trump. He's certainly not supporters of us. We, you know, he falls into that frustrating conservative category that we're essentially trying to bridge the gap between. I consider conservatives to be light Nazis. Okay. We're just further right of the conservatives. Then we have a lot of similarities. We love guns. They love guns. We follow the laws. They follow the laws, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But they fall short in the hypocrisy department. Whereas when it comes out there, when it's time to say that, you know, we're racist, if you were to ask us, I would probably be like, yes, we don't like black people. We don't like Jews. We don't like homosexuals. Whereas a conservative is more likely to cower and say, well, you know, I've got a black friend or this, that, and the other, you know, the same stereotypical stuff. So, you know, we're brutally honest is the difference.
Okay. And so Biden, does he appeal to you at all?
No. if you want to know my direct answer on that, Biden is nothing more than a nigger lover. He picked a black woman, Kamala Harris. To represent, to basically fall into favor with the black community. And he's a socialist, as far as I'm concerned. He might not admit that, but he appears to be a socialist. It's very frustrating because we don't have really anybody who that we fall in line with or who we would support. Neither, you know, Trump to us is just, he's an obstacle. He's a roadblock.
Yep.
It's like we want people to take that extra step, and conservatives just won't do it because they have their hero in the White House. They think they voted for, they spoke very clearly in 2016 when they voted for Trump. They thought, you know, we're going to vote for Trump. We're going to get him in and he's going to fix everything. And he really hasn't.
Yeah.
He's done great things for the economy, you know, prior to COVID-19 becoming as big as it has. But with as much as this country is hemorrhaging money, you almost have to have a brilliant money man like Trump in the White House just for the United States to be able to keep its head above water, because we have so much dead weight in this country that if you were to put somebody like Joe Biden in there who doesn't know probably shit from Shinola, I guess is the terminology I'd use. You put him in there, he doesn't know how to make money, and then the country is going to go belly up financially.
So I'm assuming you are going to vote. Would you be willing to say who you would vote for?
I'd vote for Trump. I'm going to go to the poll. I'm going to plug my nose and I'm going to vote for Donald Trump.
Would there ever, if someone else was the Democratic nominee, would you have voted for them or no?
It depends. Democrats these days, they're not like what they used to be. When I was growing up, when I was younger, most of my family were Democrats. It was always believed that the Democrats in America back in the day were the working class, the blue collar type people, and the Republicans were essentially the rich people who made their living off of other people's backs. And it seems like that has... It's not really that way anymore. Conservatives can be working class people, whatever you like.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a hodgepodge anymore.
How did you feel when Obama was the president?
No, I think I was pretty pissed off. I think most white people were pissed off about that in America, and I think I remember that. I remember that quite well, actually. That was in 2008, and I think a lot of white people felt put out. That they felt that the only reason why that he was elected was because of the color of his skin. And I remember going to some of the events. I think one of the events that we did was Jefferson City, Missouri. I remember going up there for that, which is located, you know, kind of centralized United States. And when we went there, all these people who were not members of the organization, they would just come up to us and say the crudest, and some of them were actually, they sounded so stupid. And they come up to us and they'd say things about Obama. They'd say, you know, well, they'd walk up to us and say, hey, I support you guys. I hate f***ers. And, you know, and we're like, well, oh, great. Congratulations. You know, I mean, it sounded so stupid when they would come up to us and say these things, but you know, it's what was actually happening. And it seemed, I've never seen the NSM that big before. What I saw in 2008, when that happened, we filled an entire movie theater for our nationals. And it was huge and it was epic. And it was mainly because we had a black president. I think a lot of the problems are coming to probably so in the US because people are being forced to get along and like it. And some of these people don't really get along. They don't, I mean, you could put, you know, not all white people are the same. Not all people of color are the same. Certainly they can't sit there and say that all white people and all people of color are the same. And if you put them into an, you know, situation where they have to get along and they under the threat of hate crimes, there's probably going to be some problems and there's going to be the resentment. And I think that's going to eventually lead to hate, which is, I think, a lot of what's been going on now for some time.
Okay. You're quite comfortable using the N-word.
Yeah, I use it quite a bit when it's called for.
When it's called for. Okay. So would you walk up to a African-American person and call them that?
Not unprovoked, no.
Do you care that people are offended by someone who is white saying that?
No, I don't care as far as that goes because to me that's got to do with insecurity. People can come up to me, they can call me all the names they want, they do so. I'm not offended by that. I don't really care what other people think, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah.
I've been called racial epithets. I've been called Dago Guinea. I use it. I actually joke about it. You know, I say, oh, stupid, greasy wop and everything else. And it's funny. You know, I find it to be, you know, I like to hear good jokes like that because, and that all basically is centered around the fact that I'm comfortable with who I am. And to me, when these people get offended by stuff like that, if you, you know, call them by the N-word or choose your racial epithet, depending on, you know, which category of people you're talking about, they're very insecure with themselves. They have problems with themselves, and that's why they get offended so easily.
Okay. So can I ask, are you a Nazi? Like, do you consider yourself to be a Nazi?
I do.
Oh, you do? So you would say that you are. So when people say that you are a Nazi, they're not actually offending you. They're just stating the fact.
Thank you very much.
What the group is. Okay. I didn't expect you to say that. I kind of almost expected you to say, we're not Nazis. We're X, Y, and Z. But no, you're like, that is legitimate.
My mouth isn't like a candy factory. I don't sugarcoat anything. If the shoe fits, I wear it. If they want to call me, you know, Nazi to me, it's a buzzword. They can use them until they're blue in the face. You know, I've been called fascist, Nazi. To me, fascist and Nazi aren't even the same thing, but a lot of people lump them into the same category. So like I said, when it comes to name calling, it sticks and stones. I don't care. I'm not insecure.
Okay. So I've only got a few more questions and then I'll let you go.
These have been some great questions, by the way. You're doing much better than the mainstream media that I deal with. I've dealt with Reuters and some of the big conglomerates, and your questions are actually better than theirs. I like them.
Good. Okay. Well, I tried. I just, like I said to you at the start, I don't know a lot about this group, and I'm just trying to put a well-rounded argument out there and put every side of it, and people can decide. I read that the NSM believes that white people are a minority and are not represented in the United States. Is that true? That's what they believe? Because I just wrote this down really quickly, but I looked up what the population was in what it was recorded in 2019, and it said that 76.3% of the population are white. That to me doesn't seem like a minority. So I'm trying to understand, is that actually a belief? Is that, like, where does that come from?
I think the vocabulary of the way they word things has a big impact on what you're talking about. I can drive all over the country, and I've done so, and I can look around, and there's a lot of white people. I wouldn't say that that's an inaccurate figure. Yep. When I look around, I think what they're actually referring to is the openness of it. Like, for example, you've got black entertainment television, but you have no white entertainment television. So I think, you know, they don't call it that. They just call it Fox News. So I think that's what a lot of people are getting into when they're referencing that. You know, they don't hear white being represented. They don't hear, you know, choose your country in Europe. They don't, you know, hear Scottish or Irish or Italian or German. They don't hear that. They just hear these names of these conglomerates. I just threw Fox News out there. I know that's a conservative favorite. The other one, CBS, NBC, one could even argue that they are for white people, but they don't call it that. That's the problem. So I think that's where a lot of the white people are getting frustrated and saying, we're not represented. And I've heard that argument, people of color, you know, they said, well, you know, you guys have got all these other networks. And I'm like, what? What networks are you talking about? And they're like, what's the one? Breitbart. There are several of them, you know, that they, you know, and I'm like, well, yeah, I guess maybe kind of. I didn't really think about it till they actually said something, you know.
So is the issue that it's not like BET, like it's not.
I think so.
The word, like, it's not advertised.
Yeah, it's not. It doesn't actually have the title.
Fox News was called White News or something. Is that what you're talking about when you're talking?
I personally don't need that, but I think that is exactly where these people are coming from when they say that, you know, they don't have any white representation. I think a lot of them do. I don't think they realize it. I don't think it's as extensive as the black community would like to believe it is. They say that, you know, we have white privilege and we have this and that. And I don't see it. I really don't see it. And I don't think the rest of the country sees it, because I don't believe it's real. I think it's made up nonsense. There's no privilege. I mean, most white people I know, they barely live from paycheck to paycheck here in the United States. They get up, they go to work every day, and they sacrifice everything else. Where not all, but a lot of the black people, they're on some type of welfare, social welfare in the country, and they're getting it handed to them for free. Now, I won't say that they're probably living in the lap of luxury. Most of them are probably living in ghettos, but many of them are not working at the same time either. So that's why they're living in those ghettos. Yes, they have food. Yes, they have a roof over their head, but they're very angry about their lifestyle. And like I said, I'm no expert on this. This is just what I'm seeing from my perspective.
Yep.
And I think a lot of the white people are resentful. That's why you hear the welfare thing constantly brought up by white people all the time. They say, well, you know, these black people, they live on welfare. They have 10 kids and, you know, they don't have to work. They don't do anything. And again, you know, they have these things, but they're also not living very nice lives, even at that.
So what's the difference, do you think, between... Sorry, go.
I was just going to finish off with saying, you know, I think that's where a lot of the resentment came from, was by white people thinking that black people are not working and getting everything for free and living in a lap of luxury. And I don't think that that's the case. I've seen a lot of these black people's homes, and I wouldn't want to live like that. And a lot of it is just because they don't apply themselves.
Okay, so I'm trying to understand, what do you think the difference is between an African-American family living in the ghetto on welfare and a white family living in a trailer park on welfare?
I think white people will try to do everything they can to get themselves out of that situation. I think black people in America have been taught, out of pure bitterness, anger, and resentment, that it's the white man's fault that they're in that position, and they're going to blame everybody but themselves for being in that position. I think there's a huge mindset difference there. And I think it's much deeper than the color of people's skin. I think the color of the skin is the least of the differences between it. I certainly wouldn't be as angry with black people as I am if we could just go and hang out, have a drink, or if we had more in common than what we do. But I don't have anything in common with these people. And I think a lot of the white people feel put out.
Why do you say that?
We have a lot of the likes and dislikes are very different. They're into very different things that I'm not into. I think that's just superficial stuff, but they're very resentful. They're very bitter. They're very angry. And what happens when I get around these type of people is when they start pointing fingers, and they generally do that, they'll blame. Eventually it'll come out in a heated conversation, having a couple of drinks and having a few too many. Choose your poison, I guess. They will come out and they will eventually say that everything is your fault. They've been indoctrinated to believe that way. Mind you, I've never owned any slaves, and neither has any part of my family. My family did not come to the United States until 1929, but Jews have indoctrinated them so badly to believe that everything is the white man's fault, and they actually believe this. I would say it's because of lack of intelligence, that they're stupid enough to believe that. Some people would argue that. But in any case, going back to my point, I don't share that sentiment. I could be angry for the way a lot of Italians or a lot of Irish people were treated. They were treated quite badly in the United States for a long time, particularly the Irish. They've got a lot to be angry about. You know, dealing with the British over the years and everything else. I mean, they were treated as slaves and everything else, and I don't hear that chip on their shoulder. Irish are kind of, you know, they've got that accent. They're like, ah, fuck it. You know, and it's fun. You know, they just don't care. You know, they want to do better. They want to get on with their lives, and I don't see the black people doing this at all. They just want to sit around and finger point.
Some people would say that NSM is a racist hate group. Are you a racist hate group? Do you agree with that? Do you disagree with that?
My standard question when I ask people, you know, what is the definition of racism? And, I tend to strike a nerve with this one here, but it's the truth. I ask them to, I'll ask you, like, how do you define, what's the definition of racism to you?
Well, it would be, racism to me would be just, it's a bias against another group of people. To be honest with you, and I don't know if this is going to piss you off or not, but I don't really view people as race. Like, I don't look at someone and think, like, to me, it's all pigment. Like, it's just the pigment of their skin. Like, I judge people for what's inside, what's in their heart, not what the color of their skin is or who they share their bed with. So I guess, I probably don't have a super definitive answer for what I believe racism is, but I just believe it's, I mean, some of the things you said, I would consider to be racist.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But I don't know if it's because it's like a generalization. Like, if, you know, can we say that all Jewish people are, like you described them, to be rats and devious and this and that? Well, I'm not sure that we can say that. So to me, that seems racist.
Gotcha. No, and I can't say that all Jews are rats either, but I can say comfortably that most of them are.
Yeah.
So anyway,
I get what back you're saying. Like, but yeah, to define, well, okay, let me put it back on you then. How do you define racism?
How do I define racism? I define a racist as anybody that's winning an argument with a liberal or a communist.
Interesting. How did you come up with that definition?
Because
I've never heard that before.
Because, yeah. Well, I mean, because it seems to be par for the course. No matter how many times you prove your points, I mean, I have been in, we're just having a debate now, friend, you know, not even a debate, we're having a discussion now.
Yeah, just the discussion.
You know, on the podcast. Right. So, I mean, I've been in very, very heated exchanges on this type, you know, platform and others before where people, I mean, they become so angry because they cannot break my arguments. And they become aggressive, and it's, if they're right there, some of them will actually become violent. And I'm like, you know, I want to ask them, I said, what are you getting so angry about? If everything I'm saying is just nonsense and it's bullshit, then you should be able to laugh it off and walk away. But these people, when I get done talking, they are so threatened by everything I just said. And I'm like, well, you just said everything I said was nonsense, so why does it bother you? So, I mean, this is, you know, what we deal with, so... We get asked by the reporters, particularly at our rallies all the time, like, why don't you just go over there and talk to Antifa? Why don't you talk to Black Lives Matter? And I'm like, we've talked to them before. We sit down, we have these debates, same thing happens. We prove them wrong. They can't break our arguments. They become violent. And we're just kind of, you know, we're beyond talking. We're done. I mean, they don't want to hear what we have to say. They just want to hear us concede to what they believe, and we're never going to do it because, you know, I'm a firm believer in truth. Whether that truth in reality is convenient for me or not is irrelevant. It doesn't matter. Okay. You know, I just want truth.
So if you found out that something that you believed in turns out that it's not the truth, would you be willing to concede that? Would you be willing to say, you know what, I got it wrong on this. The truth is the opposite of what I thought. Or are you, because like you're saying, sometimes people are so headstrong and so just focused on their thoughts, their beliefs, that they don't want to listen to anything else. They hear nothing.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I kind of see where you're going with that. And that tends to, in our movement, it tends to be like everybody's open to try to get somebody to change their mind and their heart. And I understand that. But I'm not so bullheaded as to say that I wouldn't listen to it. But I can tell you that I have been up and down these roads extensively. And I do mean extensively.
Yeah.
And I would not be as open or abrupt, or some people would even say abrasive, about my beliefs if I didn't know them to be 100% factual.
Yeah.
And my problem with the whole thing is even if everything I'm saying is bullshit, at the end of the day, I'm still white and I need to look out for my own.
What's the biggest misconception about the National Socialist Movement?
That's a good question. I think, I mean, one that stands out at me right away is I think people tend to mix us up with communists a lot.
Okay.
That seems to be a popular one. I mean, obviously it's attributed to ignorance because the two are no way related. They're at opposite ends of the political spectrum. But we do get that a lot. A lot of people are like, you know, we try to make them understand, and it seems like the common answer is as well. And I don't care if they're the same or not. I don't like either one. And you know, we hear that quite a bit, and I'm sure the other side probably hears that quite a bit too. So I wish people would kind of educate themselves on what the difference is between a communist and a Nazi, because they are fundamentally enemies.
Yeah.
So I think that's a big misconception.
That was originally going to be my last question, but I just thought of something else that I want to ask you just randomly.
Sure.
Do you have a family? Like, do you have a wife or children or anything like that?
Yes, I'm married. I have one child right now.
You have one child? If that child came home with an African-American partner, how would you feel? Is that a no-no? Like, is that...
Oh, that's a no-no.
Okay. So if they did and they were...
Well, I've already warned, I say I have one child right now. I actually have three with my ex-wife, and I have one with my wife currently.
Okay.
And it's girl, boy, oldest to youngest.
Okay.
If any of my girls, and I've told them this, particularly my girls, but the boys as well, if they would like to go out there and race mix, then they can essentially fuck off. Okay. And that's the nicest way that I can say that to any of them. And I mean that from the bottom of my heart.
So you would have nothing to do with them. You would
How
about if your son came home with
with
an African American woman?
Have a nice life.
Same thing. Okay. If they came home with someone who was the same sex?
Have a nice life.
So just heterosexual white life. That's it.
That's what is normal. And that's what we would like to see happen.
When you say normal, what does that mean, though? Like, I guess I don't really understand what normal means.
How I define normal? Normal is what I am and they are not.
Okay. Why? But why are you normal? Like, what what would you say if they said to you, but I'm normal and you're not?
Well, I would venture to look back at history and, you know, I am a Christian, but I'm not a Bible thumper. So I'm not going to go back and, you know, automatically go to the Bible, although one could easily do that and say that, you know, well, it's Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve, which I don't care for that. I think that's a lousy argument, but it is an accurate one nonetheless. But I think, again, we're getting into the types of people that I prefer to be around. Yeah. My preference, it is my preference. And whether or not it's normal, I guess, I would say that's probably irrelevant. I consider it to be normal. So those were the type of people that I'd want to surround myself. Now, if my my sons or my daughters were to bring home a mongrelized child that was half black and half white, to me, again, I've got nothing in common with these people. So I would be very, very resentful, mean and nasty about it. And as much, even if I wanted to try to change my mentality and possibly say, well, you know, this is just a small child, let's give it a chance. No, my children intentionally went out and did this. They knew going in how strongly I felt about this. And they clearly did this to, I don't know, just basically as a piss off to you or whatever they did. It was obviously out of resentment. Otherwise, they wouldn't have done something like that because they know, you know, how I feel about it. If they made that choice, that's fine. That's not something that I can ever stop them from doing, but it's just not, I can't be involved with that. That's not something that I approve of. And it seems like in most families, a lot of people tend to concede to that. If they find out there's a homosexual in their family or they find out that there's a race mixer of some sort in their family, they're like, well, it's different now because I have, you know, it's in my family now. You know, I have a homosexual sister or brother or a sister that's got a child with a black man. What, you know, but the bottom line is it's something I want in my life. And I feel very strongly about that. And again, you know, if they were to do that, we'd have a serious problem.
Okay. You don't consider your children to be mixed race because you're Italian, your wife's American?
No, my wife is actually, she's English and she's German. My first wife was actually English and Irish. So I've got a lot of, and both of them were from Michigan, which was funny. And I'm originally from New York. So it was kind of ironic the way that worked out. But I kind of pick on my wife all the time. You know, I just give her a hard time, friendly. You know, I said, that's why you're always angry with me all the time. And she says, why is that? I said, because you're German and you're English. You're busy kicking your own ass all the time. And, you know, she just kind of laughs at me. But
you don't consider your children to be mixed race?
No, because all of those cultures are European and they're white. I consider people from Europe, the original people from Europe to essentially be white.
Because some Italian people are dark-skinned.
Yeah, the Sicilians, the ones that are from the south, tend to be dark-skinned. But it's my belief, and it's the belief of the movement. Most white nationalists, for the most part, you have Sicilians that are dark. You have Spaniards that are actually dark as well.
Yep.
And from our view, these are actually as dark as you can be and still be considered part of the white European race.
Okay. So once you go past that threshold, you are no longer classified. You're no longer white.
Correct.
Interesting. Okay. I'm trying to just, I know I said that was going to be my last question, but now it's really interesting to me because I'm trying to understand what it is.
No, I don't mind the questions at all. Hey, I told the court reporters this when they threatened me with a federal subpoena up in Charlottesville. They said, you will answer the questions, Mr. Colucci. And this just happened like a week or two ago. And I said, questions? In answering the truthful questions? I said, don't threaten me with a good time. I love answering questions.
Yeah, this is your playpen now.
It really is. I love it.
I guess I'm just trying to understand. Okay, so for everyone that will be listening to this when it's out, we can see each other right now on camera, but let's say you couldn't see me right now and I said to you that I am African-American, I'm maybe homosexual, maybe I have a transgender partner, maybe, you know, like let's just put everything into one. Would that stop you from talking to me?
No, that would never stop me from talking to anybody.
Okay, so it wouldn't stop you from talking to me, but it would stop you, like, do you respect me more because I'm white?
I mean, I think you may not respect me at all, but do you... If I didn't know these things, you know, if I was, you know, like I said, if we were just talking and I couldn't see you right now, and I mean, honestly, I don't. I mean, you could be a homosexual just, I mean, between this footage right now, and I'd be none the wiser.
Yeah.
Or you could be a race mixer. To me, it goes back to what you said earlier. You said that you tend to judge people based on the content of their character, kind of like Martin Luther King Jr. said, not the color of their skin. Well, this is something that I reemphasize over and over again. I do judge people based on the content of their character, not the color of their skin. And my problem is the content of their character sucks. And that's why we get so angry with them. I mean, believe me when I say, I can't emphasize it enough. If skin color and pigment, which you mentioned earlier, was the only difference, I wouldn't be what everybody calls racist at all. Because there, I mean, and I actually grew up thinking that way. I was like, well, you know, kindergarten, first grade, second grade, third grade, all the way up through high school, I was like, well, you know, maybe up till sixth grade, I would say, you know, well, there's black people there. I've never seen a black person before, but you know, they're people. They just have different color skin.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know, I wasn't really shocked when I first saw them or surprised, you know, because I had heard about them. But it was not only until I started mingling with them that I saw just how different they were. And I was like, wow, wait a minute. This is way deeper than just the color of our skin, way different than just our facial features. These people have very different ideas. They think very differently. Aside the fact that they talk very differently, there are some strong differences and some that may even conflict with what I am. And that's a problem. And I think leading up to that is where all the problems came in.
But you would have met white people that are completely different to you as well.
Yeah.
You would have nothing in common with.
Yeah, I've met a lot of white people that, correct. I did. There are a lot of white people out there who I have nothing in common with. The difference between them and the people of color, though, is that most of them can keep to themselves, whereas the black people, particularly African-Americans, tend to be extremely aggressive. They can't leave well enough alone, and they tend to like to push white people too far, and then when it turns out to be the straw that breaks the camel's back, and everybody's like, why did this white guy just freak out? Well, we're different. You know, we have a breaking point, and white people can, you know, historically tend to be a lot crazier than black people. Black people in America look at white people, you know, they're like, man, white people are all crazy. You know, they think, I'm like, well, yeah, we can be a little crazy sometimes, you know, when you push us too far. I think they understand.
Okay. So do you think homosexuality isn't something that you're born with? You think it's a choice? Same with being transgender?
I don't think it matters one way or the other on that. I think the problem is coming in where they are coming out and they are telling us that they are demanding our approval in the LGBTQ community. That is very forthcoming. It's very prominent. It's very obvious. They want our approval, and if we don't, we're bigots, we're racist, you know, choose your buzzword, and that's wrong for them to do that. I mean, personally, the movement would come out and say that this is totally disgusting and be vehemently against it. Me personally, I think if these people would just leave well enough alone, and if that was their thing and they wanted to do that, as long as they kept it to themselves, I think this would be a lot less of a problem. This Jewish broad that's leading the Signs versus Kessler lawsuit that I'm being deposed in right now, she's the one that actually got gay marriage passed in the United States where you could legally marry. And they just keep on meddling with this. And I'm like, couldn't you guys just do your own thing and do it incognito? I mean, the whole world doesn't want to know about your sex life. I don't want to see two straight people going down the road and sucking each other's face off, because to me, that's perverted. And I certainly don't want to see two homosexuals doing that. So, you know, it's not like, you know, I'm just picking on homosexuals. I don't want to see perverts in general. you know, doing that sort of thing. And I think that's bringing the fact that they're talking about it so much, and you see so much of it on television, I think it's turning into perversion.
Okay, so people kissing in the street, you view as they're perverts?
If they're sucking each other's faces off, yes. They don't need to be doing that in public. That's out of line.
Okay, I get what you're saying. Yeah, you're not talking about a little, like, kiss on the lips. You're talking about they're actually, like, making out, essentially.
Yeah, go get a room.
Go get a room.
Yeah, that's, to me, that's inappropriate, regardless of sexual preference.
Okay. Thank you very much for your time and for being so open and answering all the questions and all the rest of it. You're very forthcoming, so I really do appreciate that. So,
all right, you take care.
Stay safe. Thank you very much. Bye.
Thanks for listening. So until next time, be the change the world needs. But for now, school's out, class dismissed.